Tonight we have the privilege of having with us Rabbi Jonathan Rieti, the son of the famous British actor Robert Rieti, known as a man of a thousand voices. We also have the privilege of having Sir Robert Rieti with us tonight. Rabbi Rieti has an MA in education and he has practiced for 18 years as an educational consultant. Rabbi Rieti has created over 25 lecture albums on topics including inner growth, health, parenting, and Jewish identity, and draws upon his background in the film and advertising industries. He currently lectures across the U.S., and he lives in the U.S., which is a wonderful thing. After you hear Rabbi Rieti, there are CDs, and this is incredible. There are iPod Nanos preloaded with lots of Rabbi Rieti right here for sale. So if anybody's interested, please speak to Rabbi Rieti. Afterwards, without any further ado, Rabbi Jonathan Rieti.
Thank you, Rabbi Zaitzik, for your kind introduction. A special thank you to Rabbi Kirsch, also Rabbi Stetsky, for inviting me to be here. Rabbi Kirsch and I go back 27 years, no more, I was at his wedding 27 years ago, but we go back further than that, to Upper Six in Haslow when I went to a Jewish school for 1 year of my life. First year of my life. Okay, so the subject I think we'll talk about tonight is the science of anger. Are you ready? The science of anger. I call it a science because you can put anger under the microscope and, if you like, magnify it to identify what are the ingredients that make up anger. And if it really is a science, then what we should be able to do is identify what is its real function. Is it really because I'm upset with you? Is it really because I'm disappointed, frustrated, you've hurt my feelings, and now I'm sharing that and I'm choosing anger as a way to communicate it? Or is there more depth to this than I'm sometimes aware of, that's the real function of my anger? So I'm actually going to ask you to help me along over here and identify what is the downside of my anger. If I get upset with my spouse, I get upset with one of my children, I get upset with a co-worker, what is the downside of my anger? Any suggestions? It affects my health. It affects your health, it affects my health. Can people get heart attacks if they have frequent spurts of anger? Yeah. Rage? Absolutely. So it affects health. What else does it affect? What are the downsides? I'm out of control. I'm out of control when I'm angry. So when I lose control of myself emotionally, I lose myself physically, am I more prone to communicate in a very clear way what it is that I'm upset about? Or is it possible I'll say things absolutely completely irrelevant? Just like your mother! Sorry, not you personally. I'm a big one. Sorry. And I start making comparisons and I say things that are completely off the chart. Alright, so number one, it affects my health. Number two, I become irrational. It can make me be, what was the word you used again? I'm out of control. What else is the downside of my anger?
It creates a damage between the relationship with the other person that may not be repairable.
Excellent. Caesar's point is the following. I could be, in the name of communicating what's bothering me, and in expecting therefore you to listen and understand, of course we're going to have a more healing relationship now, I may become, because of my anger, so damaging in the way I deliver the message, that instead of you listening, you are probably going to defend or even attack back. When I bring you my list of complaints against you, you might have a better memory for my crimes against you than I have, and now we're spiraling downwards. So instead of it helping, it's damaging. So it's going to can ruin my health, my blood pressure will go up, I get out of control, I'll say things that are not rational, and it's actually damaging in the name of communicating what's bothering me. What else is the downside of my anger? So those two ways. Yes, sir.
And then you mentioned that before.
So even if I actually get to the very specific piece that's bothering me, if I'm using anger, I'm clouding the possibility of a clear communication. So help me to understand. If I'm angry with you, are you going to be listening intently and intelligently with a serene mind to the exact words I'm communicating, or are you listening to my anger probably more than the actual content? Which is it? It's probably the anger. And that's not actually what I really, at least on the surface, am meaning to communicate. What else is the downside of my anger? Yes, sir? Sorry? Yeah, I'm being intimidated. When I use anger, I'm intimidating you. I'm getting you to be in fear of me, to get you to back down. And if you don't back down, if you try to stand up for yourself, what might I do if I use anger as a way of communicating a difference? What might I do if you try to stand up for yourself? I'll turn up the volume! And if you still don't back off, I'll get maybe even threatening. Here's where it doesn't work. Even if you back off and say, okay, for the sake of peace, okay, fine, I'll go along with you, no problem. I'll raise the kids the way you want them to, fine. I'll run the finances the way that, no problem. I'll speak to so-and-so the way you want. What are you going to do the moment your back is turned? You're going to want to do what you want to do anyway. So is the anger actually even working when I use it as intimidation? Or is it just wiring you to work out of fear, respond out of fear? Is that a real relationship? Is that an honest, intimate relationship? That's dishonesty. So in some sense, anger is intimidation, it's causing fear, and in that way, it's damaging the honesty in the relationship. That's not an honest way to communicate. And if I'm going to read your personality as fearful, shy, easily intimidated, sensitive, and I'm going to be a manipulative type of a person, I could easily use anger as a way to get you to back off on almost anything. So fear, born from anger, is not an honest way to communicate. It's damaging, intimidating. What else is the downside of anger? Yes, madam? Excellent. When I get angry, will my co-workers have more or less respect for me? Will my children have more or less respect for me? They might be intimidated and now they have to behave, cooperate, because they don't want to be on the receiving end of my anger, but that's not what we're looking for. So we have some serious problems over here with my anger. It's really not solving any serious problem. In fact, does anger ever solve any problem? I think you're really getting to the crux of it. Say in one sentence exactly what you said just before. I want to expand on it a bit more. Yes. Excellent. So what my anger is doing is not only shaming myself in your eyes, but shaming myself in my eyes. I get a lowered self-respect. My estimation of self is lowered because how do we feel when we're in control? You know, like, let's say I just came out of, I wasn't really going to admit this, I just got out of chocolate rehab last night. Are you laughing? I'm sorry, joking. Okay, fine. No, it's amazing. In New York, in chocolate rehab, I was there for 3 months. It's so amazing. You meet such interesting people. There was one gentleman in the corner who was meditating the entire time I was there, all 12 weeks. And just as they released me last night, I really wanted to know what he was saying with this mantra or something. So I put my ear right up against his mouth, and he was saying a prayer to God, saying, God, if there's no chocolate in heaven, I'm not going! Anyway, so it's very interesting. I had to make a commitment not to have more than one chocolate box a day. Now, what happens if when we make a commitment to a diet, when we make a commitment and we control ourselves, how do we feel? We feel good. But when I'm out of control, when I allow the margins just to go off the page and do what I like with that food, or let my emotions completely unravel, even if you're being humiliated, perhaps in front of other people, and I'm humiliating myself, what do I do to myself when I'm out of control? I feel lower than before. I feel out of control. I don't feel good. And this probably addresses, and this is why I want to expand on your point, I think this addresses the one item that people will raise as, well, surely if I don't express my anger, it will implode and then it's going to create more pressure. So isn't it better to express myself? And in that sense, surely it has a positive benefit. And the interesting answer to that is the following. When I choose anger to communicate the difference, as opposed to talking to you as an adult, or asking you to clarify before I assume that my position is really accurate, if I use anger, how do I feel after it? I don't feel good. I feel horrible. I feel shameful. How many people do you know that after they had a real good bout of anger, you know, I can't stand the way you treat me and you create your mom for everything. And I feel so good. I got it off my chest. That was just such a good, oh my, this is so good. How many people do you know that feel really relieved? This is wonderful. We don't feel that way. You know why? Because what am I actually practicing in the name of, I've got to get this off my chest. You have no idea how this is bothering for so long. What am I actually doing in the name of expressing anger as a means of getting this off my chest? What am I practicing? Abuse, but I'm practicing anger. Listen carefully. In the name of communicating what's bothering me, I am practicing anger. So I'm not actually getting rid of the anger, I'm training myself as this is the way I communicate a difference. You have, want to add something to our list?
Yeah.
Yes. Excellent. Excellent. Anya's point is that many times when I'm expressing anger, the illusion is that I'm in control of the situation. And so in the name of being in control, I choose to be out of control as being as a way to be in control. There's a paradox there, but the real bottom line is that does anger ever work? This is a serious question. Does it ever really work? So it's interesting, you know, Maimonides, who wrote on this subject, he has a section called Hilchot Deot, which correctly translates to the laws of thinking. And there's a section there, chapter 2 onwards, where he discusses in detail every character trait on the entire spectrum of personality. And he describes there that every character trait is not good or bad. Kindness, I would think, at least at first glance, is good. What was bad about kindness? But his point is, could I destroy my child in the name of kindness? Absolutely, I could spoil my kids, totally ruin their personality, so they become so dependent on other people doing things for them, that in the name of love, and giving, and generous, and kind, I've actually created a monster who's so incredibly self-centered. So claims Maimonides, there's no such thing as a good or bad trait. It always depends on its measure. And that's why the word in Hebrew for character trait is what? Midot. Because the word midah means both character and it also means measure. The real measure of a human being is not the shape of my body, not my wardrobe, not the postal code I live in, not the size of my home, not the car I drive. The real measure of a human being is character. Now here's where it gets very interesting. He claims every character trait, even jealousy, which looks like, well, that's negative, isn't it? No! Kinat sofrim machkim. I could use my jealousy to motivate myself to become a better me. To become more sensitive, more loving, or work harder. Every character trait, he claims, has a correct measure for its situation, except for two, which never work. Number one, ga'ava, arrogance, he says, never works. It's a distortion of self-esteem. And number two, it's twin, kas, anger. In the words of Maimonides, v'chein ha-kas hi midah ra ad nim'od, is an exceptionally negative, harmful character trait. V'roi la'adam, it's correct for a person, l'hachik atma, to distance himself from anger to the other extreme. And here is really the bottom line. If it's really true that anger never works, then why would I, as a fairly well-educated, intelligent adult, why would I use anger against my spouse? with my child or my mother-in-law. So just one minute. Why would I choose anger against someone who presumably loves, and in the name of communicating, I'm actually damaging. I'm hurting myself, my self-esteem. I'm hurting my health. I might ruin your health. That every time I speak to you, you may feel trapped or imprisoned. Oh no, what's he, she going to say? Oh, what have I said, done that's going to trigger them off? And all I'm doing is using anger grenades all day long, and you have no idea how to get out of this minefield. Why would I choose anger? And sadly, there are three reasons for the function of anger. They appear positive. They relate somewhat to what Ami was saying earlier. There's a paradox here. Number one, anger is probably less conscious than it is subconscious. Anger is my way of avoiding intimacy with myself. You see, if I'm busy accusing you, blaming you, complaining about you, denying it's my fault and giving excuses why it's your fault that this marriage is not working, why this relationship is not working, why this child is just not following our ways, it's because of you, how you raised this kid, it's your fault. Someone once asked me if I ever hit my kids. I said, I never, ever hit my kids. Except in self-defense. When I A, accuse, B, blame, C, complain, D, deny, E, give excuses for why this relationship, this career, my spiritual growth, my personal growth, my finances, the family, the children, the mother, the father, the parents, the job, the career, the community. Did I cover everybody? When I play the A, B, C, D, E game of getting out of responsibility, A, accuse, B, blame, C, complain, D, deny, E, give excuses, and I use anger for each one of those, what am I actually doing? Who am I saying has to change? You have to change, not me. Anger is a way of me avoiding myself, avoiding an intimacy with myself, intimacy, seeing into me. Because I'm so busy, you ruined this marriage! I gave you the best year of my life! Now, no one can relate to any of this. Some of you have been to know what I'm talking about. When I blame others for my bitterness and my anger, my disappointment and my resentment for why I haven't moved forward in this marriage, with this child, in my career, I'm busy looking at how other people have to change. I am not looking at me. I'm not trying to figure out, where can I change the only person I'm capable of changing? And I'm going to ask you honestly, do you know anybody? Do you know anybody in your life who you could say successfully changed their spouse by trying to change them? I'll make the question much easier. Do you know anybody in world history that succeeded in changing their spouse by trying to change them? Or is it not real change? I asked this question in Kutcher's 2 years ago in Cholam Moed Pesach, the middle days of Passover. There were 400 people in the audience. The average age was about 107. A country club for retired people. Actually, there was one lady there, she was 104. And, oh, sorry. Okay. She was 104 years old, and when they asked her what's special about your age, she said, no peer pressure. So I asked this audience, you know, there's 400 people in the audience. There were 400 people in the audience. The average age, I would say, was closer to 80, 85. I said it was, I suggest it was 50. The lady was very happy with that. So I asked them, what's 400 times 50? So, any suggestions? We could take a vote of you, but we don't have a vote. Okay. So basically we started with 20,000 years of cumulative life experience in that room. I asked them several questions. One of the questions was, the question we just related now. I mean, there are people in that room who were grandparents, great-grandparents, the people who've been married, the people who've been in the First World War, let alone the Second World War, they're mature adults in that audience. One gentleman said, I'm married 63 years. So I want you to know, marriage is not a word It's a sentence. Anyway, I see the singles aren't laughing yet. Don't worry, you get there. So I asked them, in your 20,000 years of accumulative life experience, 20,000 years, four times human history in that one room, how many people can say they know someone who successfully changed their spouse or child by trying to change them? Guess how many people said? I did. Zero. Isn't that interesting? Here are people closer to the zenith of their lives and look back and say, I can honestly say I don't know anybody that I know that changed their spouse by trying to change them. See, what is the problem? Think about it this way. When I criticize you, that label, criticize, here's my gift wrap, and I try to say in a very nice way, what is the real message when we remove the label of criticism? What am I actually saying to you?
Running them down.
Sorry?
You're running them down.
I'm running them down. What are the mechanics? What are the ingredients behind the label? When I peel the label behind, what it is that I'm criticizing, when you change, then I'll be happy. When you lose weight, then I'll be happy. You know, when you get a raise in your salary, then I'll be happy. You know, when you are more loving to me, you have no idea how much love is waiting to burst on you. Just be more supportive and appreciative of me. When I make you the one who has to change, what I'm really saying is that until you change, I'm not happy with you. I can't fully respect you until you change who you are now to someone else. I can't fully love you, I can't fully admire you until, and that hurts. Even if I try to say it without anger, it hurts. Nobody in world history succeeded in changing another person by trying to change them. Because what we do in response is resist. I mean, how many people do you know? Like, imagine you get married and your spouse says to you, I have to tell you something. And she starts telling you what really bothers them about you. Can you imagine a spouse responding like this? Oh, this is wonderful! I mean, I've always looked forward to a marriage! I mean, personal growth! You're telling me what's wrong with me, I can change myself! While you're telling me what you don't like, is there anything else you don't like about me I can change? How many people, you're called up from it, how many people do you know? No one responds that way! Nobody! We are hurt! We resist! And at the very minimum we'll resist, but if we go a little bit more than that, what we're more likely to do is defend or attack back. And then I'll bring out my list of your crimes against me. And now we're really having fireworks. So here's the question. Why would I use anger if it never works? And the answer is, it helps me get out of a relationship with myself. I'm avoiding intimacy with myself. Because instead of me looking at my... Where can I change? Where can I be more sensitive, loving, appreciative, giving, understanding, empathetic, compassionate, loyal, committed, devoted? Where can I change me? And if I do change me, you're no longer in the same relationship. You will be responding to a different me. Oh, that's how we can change. Because if I try to change you, no matter how well I try to gift wrap it, you're probably going to get hurt. Because I'm really saying, beneath that label of, if only you could, when you, then I, what I'm really saying is, I don't love you fully, accept you fully, admire you, appreciate you fully, until you change. And that hurts. So number one, of the reason why I choose anger, is it gets me out of changing myself. Me out of looking at myself. Me out of having an honest relationship with me. I'm busy blaming the world. Conditions, the market, people, parents, siblings, whoever it is I want to blame. Number two, function of why I choose anger instead of talking about it or asking for clarity. Number two, when I choose anger, I'm actually finding a way to avoid intimacy with you. Isn't that ridiculous? Think about it. In the name of wanting to communicate a difference, what am I actually doing? Am I creating more bridges, endearing myself, or am I actually damaging? I'm making your blood vessels start getting really excited, and I might get you out of control, And then you'll start playing a game of anger back. And if I think you're going to back down, if I really turn up the volume, I will turn up the volume or make threats. Could anger lead to physical violence? In America, road rage, I don't know how common it is here, road rage is a serious problem. Unprovoked. The guy just cuts him up, and sometimes might cut him up because he got cut up, and the only way out was to move into a lane without consulting the mirror, and lo and behold, he cuts someone else behind him, and now that guy's really angry. Road rage. People have killed other drivers because they got enraged in a moment of anger. Anger is very poisonous. It's really dangerous. So number two is that instead of me communicating what's really bothering me, what I'm actually doing is avoiding intimacy with you. Far from communicating, I'm actually building brick walls between us, and I'm making it thicker. Each time I add more anger, I'm making you want to back off more. And you'll be less endeared. You'll feel less safe to be yourself. Because you might start worrying, you know, if I really tell my wife, my kid feels not safe with dad, with mum, they're probably going to go elsewhere to share what's going on in their life. Because if they don't feel safe to talk to mum, to dad, about their struggles in school, or their social interaction with others, or a problem they're having with a specific teacher, or struggling with a particular subject, or just they don't understand their body, and they feel uncomfortable about their hormones, whatever it is, if they don't feel comfortable to talk to mum and dad because they know that I frequently get upset to the extent that they have no reference for what will trigger off that anger. So rather than even go there and not feel safe, they'll go elsewhere or just hold it in. And then I get really angry when my own daughter, if I haven't given her a lot of love and affection and room to speak her mind, her feelings, is it possible that if I don't give that to her and I'm her father, she'll go elsewhere? And maybe the first young man who takes an interest in this young girl, and he's got his own hidden agenda, he's not really interested in her, he's interested in what he's going to get from her. And she may fall in love thinking it's real, and then get hurt, and then I get really angry, and who's really at fault? Who pushed her away from trusting herself to talk and share? So anger has some serious downsides. Number two function is I help avoid intimacy with the people I'm angry with. Even though I'm saying that I want to tell you what's bothering me, I'm actually making you feel less safe to open up to me and have less of a relationship with me. And you might be my own spouse, my own child. All in the name of the most important people in my life. Anger claims my monadism, excuse me, never works. It has no measure. It's only poisonous. My life career is to try and become more and more in control of it, because the opposite has so many upsides. We'll look at that in a few moments. Let's look at function number three. Function number three of why I choose anger to, instead of all the other possible options, talk it through, ask to clarify, keep quiet until tension is lowered, and then bring it up. And if they just trigger off again, you know what? I'll back off, not out of weakness, out of strength, and bring it up a second time, a third time, till they see, oh, they're using anger doesn't make us back off. Instead, we're not afraid to bring it up. It's just obviously you're not able to talk about it now in an adult and mature way, so I'll bring it up later and keep coming back there till they realize, you know what? I don't need to use anger to talk about this. They're willing to talk about it without high tension. So function number three is that I'm avoiding intimacy with my Creator. See, if it's really true that I subscribe to the belief that God controls the universe, He is the only power behind all powers, if I really admit as to what the sages claim, HaKol B'Deshamayim, everything is in God's hand, could me not try and accept how I respond to different situations in my life. If it's really true, then who am I really angry with when things I can't control, people I can't control, don't go the way I would like them to go? Sure. I'm really angry with God. I may not want to say that. I put on tefillin, I keep kosher, I give charity. I don't want to call myself not religious. But if I'm really blaming other people, who have I empowered as having power? I don't go to the source and say, Ribbono Shel Olam, Master of the Universe, help me through this. I had no idea that I would be dealing with someone with this rage inside of them. And I don't have the strength. I don't know. I wasn't raised in a homeless area that had this type of anger. Now what do I do? Help me, I find the right people to help me. Help me find the inner strength within me. Help me perhaps to understand what they are so in pain about that they keep choosing anger as a way to communicate a difference. Well, I'm ready to talk. But they just go off right onto 0 to 60 in 3 seconds, and there's no in between. Master of the Universe, help me. Help me find the strength within to be able to handle it. But if I don't look to 1-800 Almighty, I choose to respond to you, what I've actually done is substitute the power for my willpower. Now, why would God send me such a difficult or different person in my life? Why?
Challenge.
To challenge me in what way?
To grow.
See, what's the only way we really grow?
For having
difficulties ahead to overcome.
We get stronger from the difficulties. It's probably the only way to really grow. Is there anyone who wants to argue that? And there are people in this audience who've been through whatever they've been through, and I think most of us will be able to say that even when I had a financial setback, is it possible that financial setback helped us become more prudent, more careful? Is it possible that a difficult relationship helped us mature to a different level of less codependent, where I was no longer willing to either accept that type of abuse or feed into it by cooperating and giving in, backing off? Many times in our lives we've made mistakes, but on hindsight, whether it's weeks, months or years later, those mistakes take on a different meaning, because the very mistake that looked like a terrible thing was the very item that made me strong. A child, perhaps a firstborn, made so many mistakes with that kid. Could it be that even with those mistakes, that child has been my teacher in how to raise the other kids and perhaps become a more loving parent for that child too? So, if that's really true, let us understand that in number 3, when I'm avoiding a relationship with my Creator and getting into the trap of thinking that other people have power, I'm losing sight of the purpose behind the test, the challenge. How do you say test in Hebrew? Nisayon. What is the two-letter root of Nisayon? Ness. What does Ness mean? Miracle. What else does it mean? Flag. Excellent. What else does Ness mean? Very interesting word. See, this language created reality. Baruch she'amar v'haya olam. Blessed is the one that spoke and existence was created. God created the universe, but first he spoke. Which means the word preceded reality, and then after he spoke, physical reality existed because of speech. Speech were the tools God used to create physical reality. So if you've got a word with more than one meaning, 3 or 4 or 5 meanings, God, you have unlimited imagination. Why don't you choose one word for each meaning? The word nisayon, which means test, is not an arbitrary term. Biblical Hebrew, Lashon HaKodesh, is a perfect language. Perfect means there are no mistakes. It means that if a word has more than one meaning, those meanings are correlated. There's a synonymous relationship. And those meanings are the ingredients, the DNA, the spiritual chemistry of that word. So if we look at the word Nes and we discover it means miracle, it means flag. Nisa means elevate. Nes means, lanus means to run away. Interesting.
Yeah.
It has a number of different meanings. And really they're all ingredients of the same recipe. Because what's the purpose of a test? A flag, what is a flag? What's the function of a flag? A flag gives identity. Also gives me direction. Is that right? Shows the direction we're going in. I have a choice that when you squeeze me, whoever you are, my spouse, my child, my mother-in-law, brother-in-law, sister-in-law, friends, neighbors, co-worker, rabbi, teacher, community, have we covered everybody? Whoever you are that squeezes me, what comes out when you squeeze me? What comes out?
Okay.
Whatever's inside. So if I've got anger inside and you squeeze me, what's going to come out?
Anger.
If I'm frustrated, I'm bitter, and you squeeze me, what's going to come out? If I try to focus on what's good in you, what's good in life, what's good in my Creator, what's good in my health, in my wealth, in my family, and you squeeze me, what's going to come out? Good will come out. See, how will I know what I really am inside? How will I ever know? How will you ever know what's really going on inside of the person you are close to or married to? And the answer is, when you squeeze them, whatever's inside is going to come out. Now why does God send different and difficult people to squeeze me? And the answer is, he's not in the business of squeezing to hurt. He's in the business of squeezing to help me see me. Help me see what comes out when I'm squeezed. So what comes out is not for God to see. He already knows what's inside. So who's it for when I'm squeezed? Who's it for? For me to see. See, if I'm avoiding intimacy, do you see what I'm trying to say? If I'm avoiding intimacy with me, and you squeeze me, and what comes out is what's inside, oh, here's my chance to see me and understand what's going on. This is a flag. This is my identity. This is what's inside of me, and it gives me direction. Is this the direction I want to continue going in? Or landlord's nest, same word. I could run away from me. Or I could, nisayon also contains the word nest, which means elevate. I elevate myself when I change the only person I'm capable of changing. But what about the miracle part? You know what? Let's ask the question. If you have to identify the greatest miracle in world history, you might select creation of the universe. And if any of us were there in the first 6 days of creation, you know, our blood vessels would have burst from excitement. Awesome! Or if you were there when the water split and we, 3 million, crossed, amazing! Or you stood when God spoke to us at Sinai, a miracle, open miracle. But let me ask you, do you really think that impresses God? You know, for us, we're impressed when nature changes. Whoa! That's amazing! That's a miracle! But you know, let's turn the question around. Because for God, is the splitting of the sea creation of the universe, is that really so amazing? No! It's nothing to him! So let's turn the question around. God, you know what? For us, that's a miracle. So let's ask you, what would it take for you to say, wow! That's a miracle! What would impress you that you would be so awed? You would say, whoa, that's a real miracle! And the answer is, when a human being changes their nature. Ooh. That's the only domain God says, I'm out of there. This is your domain, says God. Hakol b'deishamai. Not 99%, 100%. Everything is in God's hands. Chutz, except for one item. How will I respond to what happens to me? What will come out? That's my choice. And when I change my nature, that's the real miracle. Nes, nisayon, test, contains the word miracle, because I'm here to change me. So function number 3, God is in the business of hiding behind my spouse, my kids, my friends, my co-workers, my boss, my employees, my neighbors, my siblings, my extended family, all the people that squeeze me frequently, approximately 10 times an hour between them all, is not to hurt me and make me more bitter, it's to help me. God is not in the business of sending these people to shape me. People don't shape us. Circumstances don't shape us. They reveal us to ourselves. God is in the business of revealing me to me. So I can get to choose, is this who I want to continue being? Is this the identity? Is this the direction? Do I want to elevate myself? Do I want to run away? Or do I want to be the miracle that I was created to become? That's my choice. And anger is a choice. It's not a real choice. It's not real in the sense that it's really an avoidance of 3 items. I'm avoiding me. I'm avoiding an honest relationship with you. Because if I was going to have an honest relationship with you, I would not choose anger. I'll talk. And if I do choose anger, apologize and mean it and try better next time. And instead of blaming the world and where I come from, or the disadvantages, or the people, except that God is the one who's behind those powers. They're not powers in and of themselves, and God wants me to change me in response to what I go through. Let me share with you the following. Do you have City Bank here in London? You do? Okay. So, imagine you go to sleep one night, and you have a dream, and Grandma comes to you in your dream and says, "No, I've made a special arrangement in heaven that every time you control your anger, £100,000 will be deposited directly wired into this new account that I've set up with Citibank. And you're not allowed to tell anybody this secret. Every time you are provoked and you keep your cool, £100,000 wired directly into your account. But every time I blow it, whatever's in the account, just write that down to zero. After 1 year, I'm allowed to cash out whatever I've accumulated. I can cash out after 1 year. And then I can tell everybody. But until then, it's a secret." So you wake up the next morning, completely forgot about the dream. And there on the side table is a memo. It says, "Your new account number in Citibank, love Grandma." I said, "Oh my gosh, that dream. Could it be real? I can't believe it." Right? And a second later, without any notice, Mum bursts into the bedroom. "Mum, good morning, Mum. How are you?" And she's screaming at you, "You're late again for your bus!" "Thank you so much, Mum. I appreciate you reminding me." That's it. And Mum goes, "Whoa." As she walks out, you pick up the phone, 627-399. "City Banker, that was something of you." "My name is Rieti. Social Security 094392. Bank account 5'9.5", 5'11". £100,000! Oh, wait, 30 seconds ago! Thank you! Oh my gosh! Now let me just ask you, pretend for a moment this is real. How do you feel? What are you going to start thinking? How many times are you provoked to anger in a single day? How many times? Dozens, right? Per hour? So how many times did you, between the mother, the father, the brother, the sister, the siblings, the children, the grandparents, the boss, the co-workers, the neighbors, right? Between everybody, we are provoked, slight irritation, every hour of the day. Am I exaggerating? Of our waking hours. What's the upside potential here, if it were really true?
And our sleeping hours too,
yeah. Speaking from our people. So now, help us understand over here. What's the upside? If you are provoked 10 times in one day, and we keep our cool, what's the upside? What will we get? 10 times 100,000 pounds, £1 million a day. Is that a decent salary? That's decent, yeah.
You have to like the money.
Yeah, there's a lot you can do with it.
Not everybody likes money.
Well, they should. Money is not the root of all evil. Love of money is the root of all evil. But money is a lot of good. It's doing a lot of good. So let me ask you. A few moments later, Mum bursts in and she sees you. "So you still have to wait on Mum?" "No thanks for money. £1,000. Whoa. So let me ask you. On the first day, you control yourself 4, 5, 6 times. And that night, you start to dream in your mind about all the grandchildren that are not yet born that you're going to retire. I mean, the amount of money you're going to make on this is awesome! But let me ask you, let's say you're a few weeks into the program, and in the moment of forgetfulness, someone gets under your skin and you're 627-399, zero balance. Are you going to give up or start again? Why would you start again? Yeah, there's 11 months left of the program. So let's say you're 3 months into the program, you made £140 million. Right? And in just a moment of complete forgetfulness, and when you're fitting into a deadline, and you're really, intoxicated with caffeine and just falling apart, and a moment of forgetfulness, someone provokes you, and I blow it. Would you give up or start again? You start again! Why would you start again?
9 months left on the program. You have lots of money to make on this. Let's say you're 9 months into the program, you got £3.7 billion. No. And a moment of total forgetfulness. Blow it. Would you give up? No. Start again. Why? You've got 3 months left. Listen carefully. What's more valuable? How much money I make in my lifetime? Or the quality of our relationship? I'm asking an honest question. I know there's hesitation. What's more valuable? In the end of the day, what's more valuable? How many restaurants I went to, how many cars I drove, how much money I made in my lifetime, or the quality of our relationship? How much appreciation, love, admiration, acceptance, understanding, sensitivity between those closest to us in our marriage and with our children? If you have to put one up against the other and say, this, if I have to contrast them, which one counts the most? Do you all agree? The quality of the relationship? I'll take questions or comments at the moment. So let's ask the following question. A person leaves this world, 90 years old, and looks back and says, you know what? What really counted the most is how well I got along with other people. So let me ask you the following question. Imagine, in this analogy we offered with the Citibank and the money, imagine that if it's really true that controlling anger counts a long way in relationships, do you agree? 0 to 10, 0 to 10 is the most. What would you say control of anger over a lifetime will equal in terms of its value to the quality of relationships in general? Zero means control of anger has no relevance, and 10 means has everything to do with quality of relationship. What would you score control of anger? A 10. Do you have 12, 14 in the corner of the age? You're big scale. It's right up there. Do you agree? So let's pretend for a moment that a person says, you know, I'm 35 years old, I'm going to make a career out of controlling my anger. Will they completely control their anger straight away?
No.
Or will it be up and down, up and down, in and out? Let's say it takes 10 years and you're 45 and now nothing will get you angry. Instead, you'll understand, or be more compassionate, or more listening, or empathic, and your spouse, your kids are starting to learn, you know what's amazing, I remember mom and dad really, she had so much rage, but I remember the last 10 years, like, really struggling with her, now, like, it's amazing, like, she's my best friend, I can talk to them about anything, even stuff I'm ashamed of, but they're so non-judgmental, and so careful in how they listen, and give me direction, but it's without any anger, it's amazing. Let me ask you, would it be worth the 10-year struggle? Would it be worth it? Absolutely. Let's say it doesn't take 10 years, say it takes 20 years. I'm 55. I started 20 years ago, and I'm in and out of anger, in and out, and eventually by the age of about 55, cool as a dude, I will not let go of my emotions. Would it be worth the struggle, yes or no?
Yes.
Absolutely. Let's say it took to 65, 30 years of struggling. Would it still be worth the memories our children will have? You know, I remember mine, that she was in and out of anger. Like, I know what it is like. The last 30 years really worked for them. Today, they are so cool. I can't believe it. Nothing will get them on their skin. The grandchildren love them. They're so accepting. Would it be worth the struggle? Yes or no? Anger is a lifetime struggle. It's worth the effort. I should not expect that it's going to... I'm going to get there straight. Well, it's up and down. It's going to be in and out for a while. It might be a long while, but it's worth the struggle. Never give up. But here's where it gets really interesting. Our sages tell us that we should compare ourselves, emulate a certain animal when it comes to Gevurah. What does Gevurah mean? Strength. What type of strength does Gevurah refer to? Inner strength. Our sages say in Pirkei Avot, Ethics of Chalim, Eizehu Gibor, who is a powerful person? And what's the answer they give? HaKodesh Yitzro, the one who conquers himself. And what's the only example it offers as a support for this statement? It offers the following. Shenemah, as the verse says, Toiv Erech Apayim Migibor, greater is Erech Apayim. Erech means long, Apayim means nostrils.
greater our long nostrils is in terms of holding in one's anger. The anger's still there, but it's holding it in, it's controlling it. Tov el chapayim migibor. Superior is someone who controls the anger than a physically strong person. The moshel beruchah is someone who controls his breath. That when he's angry, controls his breathing and doesn't even let it be.
One letter that
doesn't even come out. He's even more powerful, miloiket ear, than an entire army that sieges a city. Interesting. The only example given of what's called givura, inner strength, is controlling anger. Here's where it gets interesting. Which is the only animal we're told to emulate when it comes to givura? Lion. Says, havigibur ka'ari, be strong like the lion. But wait a minute, what do we usually associate as the lion's strength? What type of strength do we usually attribute to the lion? He's the king of the jungle. He'll attack. You know, you keep out of his way. You know, just his roar is so fearful. But our sages, in chapter 4, paragraph 1, just told us that the real definition of gevura, of power, is internal. Now they tell us, same chapter of our fathers, this is now chapter 5, paragraph 21, why don't you be like a lion? But what do you mean, be like a lion? The lion's strength is external, not internal. And here's an amazing insight. They must be referring to something that's internal, because that's the real criteria for strength, internal strength. Amazing insight. The Maharal offers this, and you'll find this in zoology as well. Incredible. Of the entire wild cat family, how many cats can we name? Leopard, cheetah, tiger, panther, cougar, puma, excellent. I'll take your word for it. Can you repeat the name? Ocelot. Okay, ocelot. Sounds like from ocelot. Okay.
Link.
Wow, we got an intelligent audience here. So here's my question. Of all the wildcat family, when they have a fight with each other, what happens? Do you see panthers typically with their packs? Cougars with their packs? Or are they roaming in isolation? Do you know why? Because when they have a fight, they don't control themselves. They split up. They are all in isolation except for one. The lion, when he has a fight with family, when it comes to differences, what does he do? He controls his anger. Interesting. See, it's not differences, yes. Check it out, very interesting. Habigibu ka'ari means be internally strong like the lion. Don't let the differences get between us. Let me share with you. I was speaking in Kutcher, same place. And I asked them a second question. In your 20,000 years of accumulative life experience, which of the following two scenarios would you say equals a happy family and happy marriage? Number one, how similar you are to your spouse and less different. How similar you are to your kids and they are to you and less different. Is that what's going to make the marriage and the children happy? Or, number two, option two, not how similar we are and less different, but how we respond to the differences. How we handle the differences. When, not if, when they surface. 400 people in a room representing 20,000 years of accumulative life experience, guess how many people said, happiness in marriage, happiness in raising children, is all about making sure we get to be on the same page, so that we are most similar and least different to each other. How many people in that audience said that's what's going to count the most to make us happy? Zero! Isn't that amazing? People who've been through life, grandparents, great-grandparents, on hindsight will tell us experience dictates that people don't get divorced because of differences. That's not the problem. It's not how severe the differences are. Sometimes we just can't take it anymore. The problem is not the differences, it's how, what comes out of me, what comes out of you, when the differences surface between us. And if I don't change me, what's God going to do? Send me someone else to squeeze me and see what comes out.
Oh no.
Here I go again. Why does God do that? And the answer is because he trusts me. So I will eventually change. The only person I was created to change. That's the name of the game. Anger is not real. It's a lie. It's a deliberate, be it conscious or subconscious attempt to avoid myself. I'm avoiding intimacy on three levels. With myself, with others, and with my own creator. Those are the real functions of anger. But I'm in this world, in a lifetime career, to take control of anger. And in that, expect, not hope, expect that after years, be it a decade, be it two, be it more, we will reap the deep rewards of loving, admiring, appreciative relationships, that our own children will look back and say, what will I remember most about mom and dad? The first 30 years of rage, or the next 30 years of struggle, and the last 10 years of incredible serenity, complacency, understanding, not complacency, that's the wrong word, understanding, compassion, sensitivity, acceptance, empathy. What's going to count the most? And we know the answer. What's really going to count the most is how well we get along with each other. That's what counts the most. And anger management, so to speak, plays a major role in that. I will close, and I truly mean it, on one of my favorite stories. Two boys, gold is green, constantly in trouble, and mom is totally beside herself to know how is she ever going to discipline these two kids. Finally, she discovers the local rabbi is really good with discipline. So she sends Chaim, the 10-year-old, for a 10 a.m. appointment Sunday morning, Moshe for a 1 p.m. appointment. Chaim walks into the rabbi's office. The rabbi says to the boy, where is God? The boy goes, where is God? Where is God? Runs out of the office, screaming through the street, runs into the home, is hiding in a closet there for 2 hours, till finally Moshe's oldest brother finds her. Chaim, what happened to you? And the judges are everywhere. Moshe, you just find way big trouble. God's missing, and they think it's us. God is not missing. God is not missing. Every person and circumstance that's different to us, every person and circumstance that's difficult for us, is perfectly calculated to squeeze me, to see what comes out, for me to see and change the only person I was created to change. Who I am in this world that our parents gave to us in our upbringing, in our environment, in our education, is God's gift to us. But who we choose to become is our gift back to our Creator. Thank you for your patience.